If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Welcome into the Next Pats podcast. Very special episode this week because we have a Patriots mini camp to dissect. And I felt like we had to get somebody who actually was at every mini camp practice and was at all the OTA practices leading up to the 3-day mini camp. And there really was only one choice. My good friend, Mike Giardi, NFL Network. We trust his football acumen. We understand he is going to bring it when it comes to ridiculous and totally unwise opinions at times, but at least they'll be informed because he was there. He had his eyes glued to the whole thing. I was at too many camp practices. Tommy Curran was at one. So our powers combined, we were at all three. But Mike Giardi was there, perched under a tree, taking it all in. And so, Mike Giardi, thank you so much for being with us on Next Pats here.
Phil, I'm deeply touched that we are back together again on the Next Pats podcast. It's quite emotional for me.
Boy. Just think back to years and years ago when it was Dan Copen.
Yes.
When it was Gerard Mayo.
Yep.
All of these guys onto bigger and not better. And I shouldn't even say bigger. They probably are bigger, right? Individually.
I would say that they, if you ask them in a private moment, they probably all have regret that they left us.
Exactly.
At various points,
exactly.
Right? Ninkovich, exactly. Like, come on, like, let's. It's not the same.
And don't kid yourself. You know they're listening right now.
Oh, for sure.
And the reason they are listening to this particular episode is because they want to hear how Patriots minicamp broke down too. So the way we're going to do this here, we're going to try to rapid fire get through 10 questions with Mike Giardi. And I prefer the fill in the blank style because it leaves it open-ended. So you get a creative brain like Mike Giardi's on the podcast with you. You never know where that thing could end up. So let's start it off right away with the quarterbacks. And the first question is for you, Mike. Mac Jones was blank at Patriots minicamp.
Pretty impressive and slightly inconsistent. I think. So what I would say is I think there certainly were moments where you saw that growth, and there were a couple days, including the Tuesday of the mandatory minicamp, where I think a lot of people were like, the changing of the guard is already happening. And then, you know, at the tail end of practice, he throws a couple interceptions, and then it carried into Wednesday a little bit. I think there was some communication issues coming out of the huddle. Josh McDaniels made him restart some things. There were some issues with identifying protection. And I saw him not only have conversations with McDaniels, but then David Andrews to sort of get things right. Throws an interception again late in practice, took a couple deep shots that were ill-advised. And look, I'm never one who's going to tell you, don't be aggressive. Don't take chances. I think we've talked about this numerous times with all the quarterbacks that have come through here, whether it be Garoppolo or Brissett, whether it be Stidham. Like, there are times in practice, and we're seeing it in Miami right now, right? With Tua, he throws the five picks and everybody's going mental down there on the Tuesday. And Flores says, I want my guys to try stuff. This is the time you're going to try it. So I don't mind it, but I think you want to see something a little bit cleaner. And I think that's what we'll be looking for when he gets to training camp.
The trying things out idea was a daily conversation with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yes, it was.
Because the interceptions were a daily occurrence with Jimmy Garoppolo, it felt like. And so it was, okay, but you can't really figure out how good you are or can be unless you're really pushing yourself, unless you're really taking risks in those situations. I would say my word for Mac Jones, I would just say Mac Jones was busy at Patriots minicamp, busier than I thought he would. And that's my biggest takeaway, because you're right. He had rookie mistakes up and down just about every single day. Now, I do think even with those mixed in, there are a couple days there where he was pretty clearly the best quarterback. I think that speaks pretty highly of him. I also think it tells you a lot about the quarterback room in general there. I just feel like for him to be getting the same number of reps essentially as Cam Newton already, to be clearly ahead in the coaches' minds at least, and if not ahead, at least to be trusted to be given the number of reps that he was given more than Jarrett Stidham already. And you could say he was a first round pick. That should be a foregone conclusion. We've never been here before with Bill Belichick. This is uncharted territory. So he's getting the same number of reps as Cam Newton. There was one practice where he got more. I would say 2 out of the 3 days, he looked better than Cam Newton.
Yep.
They're trusting him to push it down the field. He's confident enough to push it down the field occasionally. He's not just check down Charlie day after day after day. The fact that we've seen him change plays at the line of scrimmage, and even, you know, when that happens, it's usually a pretty slow paced walkthrough type of period. But all of those things are things that I wasn't sure I would see in mid-June. And I think it bodes well for his chances, at least. I don't know if he's going to start week one, but I think it bodes well for his chances to start in week one, that they've just given him so much. It hasn't always been good, but the fact that the workload has been where it is, I think, is good news for him. And this leads us to our second question. The odds of Mac Jones starting week one for you, Mike, are blank.
31%. Yeah.
Okay.
So look, I still think that there is this connection that Bill and Cam have, and there's almost a feeling of responsibility to him based on what happened last year, and realizing that as they got into that season, man, we got nothing to help this guy out. So yeah, there are some problems there. There's some accuracy issues. He's still struggling to see things at the speed that we want him to see at, but then he's throwing to who and what, and no one's getting open. I mean, you literally had no production from your tight ends last year. I think there were a lot of problems. So I think, look, if Cam did what he did the first 2 days of minicamp and doesn't have to bounce back on Wednesday, maybe my number's up. If Cam starts to do this in training camp and has those Mondays and Tuesdays of mandatory minicamp, and that lingers into training camp, and we're seeing a lot more of those than we're seeing good days, then I think the number goes up there as well. But I think he's going to be given the opportunity to either succeed or fall on his face in August. And I think he controls that, right? And I thought there were really good signs for him on Wednesday, just the way he controlled things, the tempo, less padding of the ball, less shuffling of the feet. The ball was out quickly, decisively, accurately. He maybe made the best throw I think I've seen him make, at least in a practice, on a wheel route to James White with Kyle Van Noy draped all over him. I'm not sure he makes that throw last year at any point. He wouldn't have made it Monday or Tuesday, but he makes it on Wednesday. So that's where I was having a little bit of a reticence in seeing Mac start right away. But I think we're going to get there. And I like everybody else who pays attention to some of the numbers and whatnot, week five seems like the perfect place. If Cam is just okay, you get through Tampa, and then Mac becomes your quarterback after that.
My number is going to be 49%.
Ooh, all right.
The reason I was okay with your number, though, is because I think before minicamp, I think I was probably closer to 25%.
I was too.
And I thought, once we get through minicamp and maybe shows you a little bit, but then you get into training camp and maybe he shows you a little bit more, and maybe he has one good preseason game, then you start to see the reps really get bumped up, and he's getting almost as many reps as Cam Newton, and we're seeing him take snaps with David Andrews, and it's like, oh, it looks like something's starting here. We're already there, right? Which is surprising to me. And maybe they're just throwing it all at him, and maybe they got through minicamp and they got through yesterday, which was his worst day of the three, and they said, all right, it was trial by fire minicamp, but now we know it's probably going to have to be Cam because it didn't go the way we wanted it to. And we need to give Cam as many reps as possible in camp to get him ready for week one, because he needs a lot of work too. And we can't give everybody 100 reps a day. So it was fun at minicamp. It just didn't go the way we wanted it to. So Cam's the guy. I don't think that's how they're going to see it though, Mike.
I would agree with you completely.
So I do think there is a path for him. And I think the path could be made pretty clear earlier than maybe we think, because don't you feel like at some point, again, with the reps, 2 weeks, 3 weeks into camp, like they can't decide who's going to be the starter August 28th. They've got to decide and then get that guy ready. So I think there'll be a competition, but I think it might only last a couple weeks, and maybe it'll still be Cam. But I think by the time we get to mid-August, you're going to start to see one guy get the lion's share of reps, and they're just going to try to roll with that guy. Don't you think? I mean, we're unused to seeing quarterback competitions play out. So I don't know for sure, but that's how I see it. Do you see it?
No, I'm completely with you. In fact, I think that first week of training camp, and I'm talking about once they, you know, you have those couple acclimation days that they have at the beginning. So just throw those aside. When you actually start doing real football and that first week of doing real football in training camp, I think it's huge, because I think, to your point, like, we have to figure out who that guy is, and we have to start getting him ready for week one. And there's going to be at least probably one joint practice, if not, you know, a couple session with the Giants, but there may be at least another one there, which, if I'm the Patriots, I'm kind of pushing for. I think you should want that, because you know how you can kind of control that and put guys in different situations. But I do think there's a point where you can't just say, all right, we're going to keep splitting the reps. And I think if you continue to keep splitting the reps, then to me, that almost indicates you're really kind of leaning towards the rookie, right? That Cam is just not showing you enough to say, okay, Cam, you get 75-80% of the reps now, and we're going forward with you in September as our starting quarterback. It's almost like, well, no, the kid is still right on your heels, and we can't separate. And I think if he can't separate in that first week, you know, then that number is going to go way up for me in terms of when Mac Jones starts and what the percentage is.
I do. I just feel like, you know, they're not all that – the level of NFL experience, right, is such a benefit for Cam Newton versus Mac Jones. He's just seen more NFL defense. He, I would assume, understands – what's going on across the line of scrimmage from him much better than Mac Jones does. But when it comes to the Patriots offense, Cam Newton has a head start, but it's not like he knows the offense. I think that becomes, you know, the conversation as we get deeper into, okay, which guys is going to be. Well, Cam's got the advantage in that he knows the Patriots offense. I don't think he knows it all that well, Mike.
Didn't he tell us that on Tuesday, that he's still like, yeah, you know, I feel a lot better, you know, obviously from where I was a year ago, but that there's plenty of stuff that he doesn't know. I think that's why I looked at Wednesday as being a really, really good day for him, because it seemed like everything was quick, like he got it. But when you look at the way they've shaped this offense in the past with Tom Brady at quarterback, and the way they've sort of tried to create it in this offseason with what they did via free agency, the guy that does that best on the roster, that short intermediate stuff, the making your livings between the hashes and the option routes, the guy that throws the best ball on that, the most decisive football on that, is the rookie.
And he was more decisive. The 2 days that I saw it, the ball was, yep, he was more decisive than I thought he would be. And on many occasions he was, you know, he's more decisive than Cam. Cam still has those reps that we associate with rookie quarterbacks where it's pat, 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 and ends up being a tuck and run, or it ends up being a throwaway. And Mac Jones has had those too. But Cam Newton is still at that phase with his understanding of this Patriots offense. And so that's why I think the door is open. Let's talk about the number two guy, because this leads into Cam, but it talks about Stidham as well. And obviously we're next Pat's podcast. We're talking about the young guys. I still kind of classify Stidham as a younger guy, but maybe none of these guys will be the, I have no idea where your brain is going to take us in this question. Mike Blank will be the Patriots backup quarterback for the majority of the 2021 season.
Brian Hoyer.
And I was not expecting that.
I know. So look, I've wrestled with this.
Clearly insane.
Yeah, maybe. So I've wrestled with this notion, right? I think if Cam is the starter and gets replaced, then I think Cam's not going to want to be here anymore. So if I'm thinking week five for Mac Jones as the sort of obvious and slot in for him to take over the job, is Cam going to really want to be around for 12 more weeks? And I think this is a playoff team. So beyond that, as the backup, or is he going to say, you know, Bill, this just ain't happening for me. I just don't want to do this. So I have a hard time thinking that a guy who thinks he's one of the best 32 is going to willingly accept that. And look, we saw on Tuesday, his energy level was way down as Mac got more of the reps and he was struggling. And I think there's something that you have to watch there with that, because he is someone who is like the Pied Piper there, not to go back to Jacoby Brissett, but like that sort of energy, and guys feed off of him. And if that energy level is down and he is kind of sulking off into the corner, I don't think that's good for the football team. And I'm not knocking him for it, because I think when you're super competitive, sometimes that stuff just stings. And he's been the guy for as long as he can remember, right? So I kind of understand where he's coming from that. But I just wonder, long-term, is that sustainable? And I don't think it is. I don't think Jared Stidham makes it to September with this team, or makes it past that final cut I think he's going to be in the Jacoby Brissett for Philip Dorsett. I think that's what we're looking at with him. Or a late round pick for Jared Stidham. I just kind of feel like everything went past him at this point. And he's an afterthought in the competition. And while Hoyer's working with the scout team, you know, against the number one defense, the value there is obviously what? He knows the offense better than anybody else. He is here, even though he won't say, he is here in many ways to help Mac master this and feel comfortable. He's been in this role before, Hoyer has. And I think that's where we're headed.
See, so I agree with you. If the starter job plays out the way that you're anticipating, where it's a month of Mac Jones as the number two and Cam Newton as the guy, you probably keep Brian Hoyer somewhere in the building. If he's not on the roster, you can still keep him on the practice squad as a veteran guy with the new rules now. And so that makes a lot of sense to me. If somehow Mac Jones does win the job, though, I think Cam Newton is not going to be here. And you could say, well, I mean, who's going to take, where is he going to go? I think it's a good question, but maybe there's an injury somewhere. And I think he would rather not do that. That's just my opinion. And I think from the team's perspective, to your point about the energy, it's a double-edged sword with him, right? You know, part of the reason he's the leader that he is and he is so respected is because he wears his heart on his sleeve and his energy is palpable. And when things are going well, it gives the team a lot of juice. And if you're not getting that from him, it could go the other way. And it could be a detriment to what you're trying to do in terms of the culture you're trying to build and the feeling in the locker room you're trying to establish if you're Bill Belichick, especially with a young quarterback there who's kind of like, can I lead now? Can I not? Yep. Is this guy looking over my shoulder every 10 minutes? You know, so I would say, though, if Mac Jones ends up winning the job week one, it'll be Jarrett Stidham. Because I think Stidham has shown us a little something, and I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, and I don't want to have, you know, be accused of recency bias, though I'm sure I will be, and maybe that's fair. But he didn't show me through these 3 days that he can't play. And maybe things are different. You know, we know what his MO is, right? Best looking quarterback in the business in shorts and a t-shirt. And that's what they were in minicamp. So this could change in training camp. The pads come on, preseason games, what have you. Everything could change. But when it comes to having at least a little bit upside, some understanding of the offense, you know, I just think he gives you more if something were to happen to Mac Jones than Brian Hoyer would. If you had to play, you know, you still want to be a competitive team. If Cam Newton's not on the roster and Mac Jones is your starter week one, but he gets hurt week three, who would you rather start a month's worth of games? Would you rather have it be Brian Hoyer or Jarrett Stidham? I'm not sure yet. I think it would be Stidham, because I just, even though we have no idea if he's going to have the poise ever to be able to handle that, I think he gives you a little bit of upside where I'm going to go with Jarrett Stidham, because I do think, even though I'm at 49% with Mac Jones starting week one, I'm feeling like that number will change in training camp.
You're putting and it, so, let's be real. You've got it at like 85% Mac Jones is the starting quarterback. Come on, just come on and listen, say it. Just tell the people.
Cam Newton just is going to have to be day three minicamp Cam Newton. And I think there's a chance of that. I do. Better offense around him. I think maybe he's a little bit healthier. You know, who knows? I just don't feel great about it. So, you know, those percent, that 2% that could flip could change at any moment.
Can I just quickly, before you go to the next one, just on Stidham, he made the best throw each day in mandatory minicamp. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just like the single best throw, you said that was the throw. He did it on Monday. He did it on Tuesday. He even did it on Wednesday, even though I mentioned the cam throw to James White on the wheel route with Van Noy all over him. But there is something when I'm watching him that I wonder about his level of processing what mm-hmm. happens around him. And we've talked about Cam and the speed with which he does it. I think sometimes I'm not sure that Stidham knows what he's looking at. And there are various instances in my notebook in the few reps that he got, obviously in 11 on 11s, where I'm like, that didn't look right. You know, something didn't look right there. There was fingers being pointed and Andrews is turning his head and looking back and Merteti Karas at center. Like that, to this point, he's been in the system now. This is his third year here. He should know. And I feel like there are times where I don't know that he necessarily knows that. So yeah, he does probably throw the best looking ball out of all the guys. And he has those moments, but there seems to be something missing there with him. And I can't completely put my finger on it, but I think we've seen it now. I thought I saw it that first year, even though some people thought he was the best looking rookie quarterback they've ever had here. And I think,
he was just as good as Jimmy was that first year.
He was. No, I'm not. Look,
I thought I was going to trigger you there. That was an intentional troll job on my part.
No, Pete, I know the Jimmy thing with me and all that stuff, but like there are moments with Jimmy, and it's actually funny because it happens today. You were talking about the idea as we were talking about, taking chances. Jimmy still takes chances at 29, 30, like some of the chances that he should know that he shouldn't do anymore. And I think, I don't know. I kind of feel like Stidham does some of the same stuff as well, but I'll give you that.
I think that's fair. And I think it does speak to in part what they were doing defensively, which is kind of interesting to me, where it felt like the 2 days I was there for sure. And it sounded like even a little bit yesterday, pretty blitz heavy periods. Yeah. And so again, I'm going to relate everything back to Mac Jones, but if you want to get that guy ready, are you better off getting him comfortable, because he's trying to get used to being a pro and you're just throwing him vanilla, cover two looks all through mini camp. And then you get to training camp and you start, dipping his toes in the water, dealing with pressure and calling out protections. It's like, no, you want to get on top of that stuff as much as you can now. Fail now, continue in training camp so that if you are the guy by week one, you're not looking at it and saying, oh boy, we're about to face the heaviest blitz zero team in the NFL and the Miami Dolphins. And we did it one day in the last week of training camp, like they really were, it looked like trying to speed up.
Yeah. All Brian, these quarterbacks. You're great. That's a great point because Brian Flores is going to be like, let's just go vanilla against this kid. Robert Saleh is not going to go vanilla. Dennis Allen, they're going to throw everything. If he's the guy, they're going to say, all right, kid, what do you got? We're going to throw combination platters at you that you've never seen. We're going to blitz you here. We're going to fake blitz this. They're going to roll different coverages at him and say like, oh, he can't handle it. You can see him, the brain spinning and the smoke coming out his ears, or this guy's pretty cool and we can't seem to fluster him. And then what's the next page? What's the next reaction to that? So yeah, I would totally agree with it. The idea of trying to, hey, this is what it's going to be like, kid. Can you handle it? Can you handle it now? Because if you can't handle it now, you sure as hell ain't going to be able to handle it in late August or September.
Right. And be comfortable with failing now so that you're better off then, because that's exactly what Bill Belichick would do. If he's facing a rookie quarterback, we know how that looks. Second year quarterbacks, even a lot of times it's just all out aggressive, come after the kid and force him to beat you. So I think that part of it is smart. Let's go try to at least go a little bit rapid fire because we've got a bunch here left. This next one's a little bit complicated. I don't know how we'll get through it rapid fire, but we'll try. The Gilmore situation will be resolved if, because this is obviously outside of the quarterbacks and maybe even ahead of the quarterbacks, the biggest storyline coming out of minicamp.
If they double his salary for this year and then promise no franchise tag, I think, in knowing what I know about the situation, obviously he wants a longer term deal. I don't think that's coming from them. I'm not sure it's coming from anyone else. So at this point, okay, how do we bridge this? Our team is good. We spent a lot of money here, but we're not nearly as good without you as the number one corner and someone that can move around and cover the best receiver all over the field. So, all right, let's just figure out what's the number. Is it 15, 14, 16 that we can get there? The Patriots tend to like to have somewhere between $5 and $8 million to play with once the season goes. I believe they're at 15 right now. So that's easily doable. Even say you give him that 10 million and he's up to 17 and a half for this season. You can tweak somebody's contract and create the extra space if you want to make a move at some point during the year or around the trade deadline. I think that's the best case scenario. He comes back, plays for a team that's back in the playoffs, shows everybody once again, that he's still one of the best corners in the league, not too far removed from being defensive player of the year. And then he gets an opportunity to hit the market and, maybe get a multi-year deal with some nice guaranteed money as a third and final payday for him.
Could incentives be an option where you say, if you want to play around with the cap, make him not likely to be earned, right? He only played 11 games last year. Yep. So say you play 12 games, that's an extra four right there. Yep. You make two picks. You only had one last year. That's another three or what, and just try to get him there. Do you think that's possible, or you think he'll say, no, I'm gonna need it up front here, guys, or I'm gonna continue to sit out?
I mean, I think he believes in himself. So I think if you put those numbers there, especially from a performance-based standpoint, like the interceptions, I think he would say, yeah, I got that, you know? So
I just think it will be interesting if he's focused on that next long-term deal. Is the best way to get that, if that's the end goal, if it's not just bumping the pay for this year, is the best way to do that not pulling a Logan Mankins and saying, listen, you guys need me, right? Yeah. I'm with you. I think he's got a lot of leverage here. He allows them to play the defense they want to play. He's still a very good player at a very important position. If the goal is getting a free agency, and, you know, can he eat whatever fines come his way and sit out till, you know, midseason and say, okay, I've reduced my injury risk as much as I can. I'm going to go out. I'm going to ball. You guys are trying to make a playoff run here. I'm going to ball for 8 weeks and into the playoffs, and then I'm really going to get paid. And that's because that's what I care about. That's how I'm going to play it. I don't know if he's there yet, but if that was the end goal, if that's the carrot he's chasing, is that next 3-year deal. I mean, you could make an argument that's the best way to go about it.
He has proven to me in the last year that he is the most savvy businessman the Patriots have had since Logan Mankins. Certainly more savvy than even someone like Tom Brady, who we know ate lesser contracts. Mm-hmm. And then maybe that last year, I'm not going to join practices unless you kick my salary up. But like, you took 20 years of lesser deals. So to me, it was like that was a wash there. I think Gilmore has made it clear. I think he understands the past. I think he knows about the Richard Seymour situation and the Deion Branch situation and the Logan Mankin situation. I think he knows what happened to Tom all those years. Like, this is how it's got to work. I think even Devin McCourty, who got into free agency and got a richer offer from someone else. And, you know, as Bill has often does with some of the guys that he respects, they come back to us when you have that final number, and we'll see if we can't make something happen. And Devin played that game right till the very end and got what he wanted. He got more money and a better deal from the Patriots than he would have gotten somewhere else to stay. So I think Steph has wisely read up on that, understood it, and I think he is prepared to do that because, look, history shows if they can get over on you, they'll get over on you. And the only way they're not going to get over on you is if you use your leverage. And so often guys don't want to use it. I think he's already proven, he proved it, I think, last training camp that he would use his leverage. And he's certainly doing it again this year.
Who would see an increased role with Gilmore out? Based on what you saw in minicamp, if we want to stick with our fill in the blank theme, blank would see an increased role with Gilmore out.
Jalen Mills. And that's a little dicey to me. I think he's a jack of all trades, but not, you know, not the master of one. And I think one of the things in talking to people from Philadelphia or teams in the NFC East that played him quite a bit that I gathered is I don't feel like he's a top end speed guy. And, you know, that's to be your number two corner in a league where, you know, passing has evolved and you're putting 3 and 4 guys out there at a time. And some of these guys are just freak athletes. I think that's a recipe for disaster. And I think we saw it at various points during OTAs and minicamp. Yeah, he's had some moments where you're like, oh, that's a nice play. But he's had some moments where you're like, man, he's like 2-3 yards behind that guy. Like, so I think that's again, if I'm Gilmore and I'm checking in with my teammates and they're checking in with me and they're being honest with me, they're like, dude, we really need you here.
Could you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. He had a very good Tuesday, I believe it was practice, had his hands on the football a lot. Was doing a lot of talking as well. So, you know, you like the confidence there, but I just don't think that's who he is. I think his value is in his versatility. And if you wanted to use him as like a third corner, if you want him in that Jason McCourty role, that's fine. You could probably get away with that. But if he's the number two, because JC Jackson's the number one, because Stephon Gilmore's not here. I think the defense would have to change to a certain extent, you know. I think you'd end up playing more zone, which is what they did, you know, with Gilmore out. But I think even with Gilmore there, I think they just weren't. I mean, think about the front seven last year. We had Juwan Bentley and Anthony Jennings playing a bunch, and you had John Simon and Chase Winovich on the edge a bunch. You just had no ability to pressure quarterbacks, which makes it really hard to play the man-to-man defense that you want to play when guys are just sitting back there for 3 and 4 seconds at a time. So if Gilmore's not there to become more of a zone team, I mean, we got really down the road last night on Early Edition, where it's like, okay, If somehow it doesn't work out, and I think it will with Gilmore, you know, you become more of a zone team. And all right, now you got to sell out on being a zone team. And maybe you give Richard Sherman a call. And instead of giving Stephon Gilmore $7 million extra bucks, maybe, you know, I have no idea what Sherman's wants would be in terms of salary. But, you know, whatever money you save by not paying Gilmore, would you be able to give a chunk of that to Sherman and then you become a better zone team? I don't know. But
yeah, hey, look, that's not a moving piece there. That's not a wild take and a wild sort of trip to go down and a road to go down. He's out there. He wants to play for contender. I believe this team is a contender if they get competent quarterback play. And if you can't come up to something with Steph, all of a sudden, what is a strength becomes a weakness. And, you know, I guess you'd have to go back and look at the tape because obviously Sherman doesn't run like he used to run. And he was never a huge top end speed guy anyway, but obviously, you know, angles and the intelligence and being able to read things as well as he did, but you'd have to shift gears. And that would be interesting because I think I like them best when they're man and they're aggressive. I think, you know, Brian Flores, when he took over for Patricia, you saw sort of like that shift. And then that defense became an angry defense and an aggressive defense. And guys were flying around and making plays. And we didn't see that a ton in the Patricia era, even though obviously they won plenty of games when Matt was here too.
Who was the most impressive rookie at minicamp? Is it an easy answer?
I think it's Mac.
Okay.
I agree. I mean, because again, we're hyper-focused on that position because as you mentioned in the beginning, we've never really been here, you know, this quarterback competition thing. And we've never been here with a rookie first round quarterback with a chance to start sooner rather than later. And, you know, look, they're obviously growing moments, but, and mistakes, but that's to be expected. I just think he looks like he fits, you know? And that's something to your credit, Phil, I'm going to hit you with the trumpets here. You called this way back well before the draft. Like he's the perfect guy. I think you and I debated, but you did. He is the right fit for what they have done for 20 years and weren't able to do last year. He seems to have the traits that they admire in a quarterback and want in a quarterback to run that offense.
This is the one portion of the podcast where we do not have to go rapid fire is when you shower me with praise. So, you know, I just want to make sure do we get it all out? Do we got it all out?
Well, no, because and I remember the debate we had on early edition.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I'm not, I just don't see it. And now that I see it in person, I absolutely see it. I saw you saw it earlier than I did.
Well, hey, I mean, listen, there's still, even if I think he has a good chance to start, and even if I think he's a good fit for the offense, everything changes when the threat of actually getting hit
for sure
becomes a thing. And we saw it with Jared Stidham the last 2 years. So that will be interesting. I'm going to give Christian Barmore an honorable mention when it comes to impressive rookie, because I did see him in the backfield quite a bit. Again, no pads, all well and good there. But you know, in those live periods, you're still working your technique. You're working your hand placement. It looks like he's a pretty good athlete. So he gets honorable mention. Most impressive second year player. We talk about the second year jump all the time. Next Pats. This is something that we're focused on here pretty consistently. Who was that for you?
Josh Uche.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Look, again, there were some unbelievable proclamations made about him during OTAs that I just pumped the damn brakes, people. But you can see that incredible athleticism and some of the bend. And then you start to look at the ability to play around with some of those guys, with Judon, now with Hightower back, with Van Noy, it gets you a little bit excited about what they could do there and what his athleticism could bring to that front seven, which again, that front seven was pretty awful last year. And he was part of it, albeit a smaller part of it last year, not getting a ton of snaps, dealing with injury and whatnot. But I think there's a chance for this kid to elevate and be, you know, an impact defender, especially in those passing down situations.
I'm going to go with Kyle Duggar. We saw him make an interception, you know, on an overthrown pass from Cam Newton. But I just think we've seen him play the deep part of the field. We've seen him play in the box. I gave Tom Curran a hard time because his comp for Kyle Duggar is Rodney Harrison. Mm-hmm. But he's watched a lot of Rodney Harrison film, I know. I think he has the potential to be better than Patrick Chung, who we know is a great Patriot, longtime Patriot. I just think he's a little bigger. I think he's a little better athlete. He showed a lot having no offseason coming from Division II just last year. I think he could be an impact hitter, but I think he has ball skills too. And so, you know, you think of all those things, put them together, he's about the same size as Rodney. Who knows if he's going to have that kind of career, but I think when you think about Duggar and what he could be, I think that should be the highest end comp. Mike, who will be the surprise contributor from the 2020/2021 draft class? So take Duggar out, take Uche out, ooh, you know, second round picks. Okay, whatever. But like, is there a surprise guy in that group? And I have one that I think is going to knock your socks off. So I can't wait to go.
You go first.
I'm going to go Quinn Nordine. I think there's a chance Quinn Nordine makes the team. I just think he has a physical skill set that they covet. The guy is launching footballs left and right. We talked about it last week on Next Path because we really saw for the first time during an OTA practice, but I saw nothing during minicamp that led me astray from, wow, this guy has a really impressive leg. And even Cam Accord, you know, talked about it. It's just, it's a little bit different when that guy swings through. He's a lot of velocity with his leg. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be a kicking expert, but, you know, Nick Folk can't be the guy forever. And I don't think it's going to be Roberto Aguayo either. I think there's a chance. This is where you find kickers too, right? Like,
yep.
Most of them are undrafted. It's not the fifth round Justin Rohrwassers of the world that is like the standard way of finding a good kicker. So, never mind the second round Roberto Aguayos of the world. Like, so there you go. That would be a surprise to me, but not like a total knock me down and put me parallel.
As I think on it, and it because of what they spent at tight end with the money invested in Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, you sort of figured like, oh, this is really, you know, Asiasi and Dalton Keene are afterthoughts. But I think Asiasi's had a pretty good showing here through OTAs, and I especially here in the minicamp portion of it. And I wonder, based on the injury history, especially of Hunter Henry, if that might present more opportunities for Asiasi. And, you know, just being far more advanced, obviously, having an offseason in person, being able to be taught in person, you can see some of the things that obviously drew them to him in the draft last year as a third round pick. So I'm gonna say that. Like, I don't know, it could be a 20-25 catch season, but based on what happened last year and the way you felt about it after it was all over, you're like, that's a wasted pick. In watching him this spring, I think there's a chance that he's not a wasted pick.
All right, we have two more here. We have 2 minutes.
All right, we can do it.
Most disappointing minicamp from, and I will leave this to you picking from any member of the 2019, 2020, or 2021 draft class. So I would consider all those guys still young. First, second, third year player, who was the most disappointing of that group?
This is a straight up layup. It's N'Keal Harry.
So N'Keal Harry though had a few little plays in there. Mike Reese, our guy, mentioned him a couple times.
He made a couple stop routes in front of defensive backs 5 yards down the field. I just watched him really closely during the sort of the wide receiver drills area where they're working on footwork and they're doing stuff in the back of the end zone. I've shot some video of it. And like, if you look at his footwork and even compare it to, and I know they're different sizes, Gunnar Olszewski, but even like someone like Jacoby, who's, you know, not in the same body type as N'Keal, but bigger. And there's no comparison. Those guys do it naturally. And flow, and N'Keal, it's everything is choppy and it's tight and it's no explosion coming out of the break. And I mean, you want me?
It's N'Keal.
You want to put like an early surprise cut? He would be someone that's for me. Guy. Like I think he's already on the roster bubble right now.
I don't disagree, and I'm with you. Like I thought he was okay.
Yeah.
He did not stand out in minicamp.
He's a first rounder, for God's sakes. Come on, man.
I know. Listen. And so you've taken that one. I'm going to go Juwan Williams because I still haven't seen really anything from him defensively. He played a fair amount special teams last year, and that may be his saving grace to stick on the roster. You know, second round DB, special teams, I get it. But it's a team that might need a corner, and I don't know if he can play corner. Last question, Mike, your biggest question now going into training camp. Mine, I will tell you, is just the timing of when the reps start to skew towards one quarterback or the other. Is it 2 weeks into camp? Is it the day one of camp? Is it, you know, late August, which I think would be too late, but that to me is going to be the next big question.
I could easily go the same way, but I won't, just to be different. We've talked quite a bit about quarterbacks. I still look at wide receiver as a giant question mark. I didn't think Kendrick Bourne had a particularly good spring. I think he's okay. There are moments where you're like, oh, it's pretty good. And then the next play, the ball's on the ground. Nelson Agholor, same thing. I ran by the, and he dropped it. Like there are plenty of moments where I'm like, I don't, I like what they did at tight end. I don't know if they have enough at wide receiver. I still look at them right now and still think that Jacoby Myers is their best wide receiver. And I don't think that's what they were intending to do with the money they spent in the offseason. I think they were hoping to push Jacoby down to a four, and I still think he could very well still be their best receiver.
Well, you are our best guest this week, Mike Giardi. Oh, thank you so much.
Am I the only guest this week?
Yes, you're the only guest, but that's neither here nor there. You're still the number one guy, and we appreciate you. Thanks so much for being on with us and sharing all of your just unbelievable wealth of Patriots knowledge and your observations and even a few totally insane, completely unreasonable takes. We appreciate those as well.
When you get to be my age, you know, sometimes you have these crazy thoughts. It just happens.
Sometimes that happens.
Old man yells at cloud. Sometimes I yell at clouds.
All right, that's going to do it for the Next Pats podcast this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you're checking in next week because we're going to be coming right back at you. We're going to be doing more deep dives on this rookie class. We still have plenty of players that we want to share more about with you, talk to some of those people that are closest to those players so you have a really good idea of whether or not they might be able to carve a role for themselves come training camp. Mike Giardi, thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. Rate, comment, subscribe. We'll talk to you next week.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.